it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I'm Gene Bolduc, your host. Joined today by our senior elections correspondent for Indecision 2018, Aaron Keck.
Hello.
You didn't know about your
senior
new title.
Elections correspondent
right.
is SEC. I don't know if that's the best abbreviation to have these days.
It could be.
Yeah.
It means that there's fear and trembling when you come in the room. Everybody's like, no, I wasn't trading on that stock. I wasn't Carl Iconing anything. No, we're just we're talking today about the stage is set, the menu is fixed, and the ballots are being printed somewhere in the bowels of the Board of Elections. Is a print shop that's printing up ballots for the 2018 primaries, and in the case of the Orange County School Board general election for 2018. And so we thought we'd walk through some of these races and share what we know, if anything, about some of these candidates and kind of where they're coming from and what they are talking about doing and what we think. I don't know. Do we want to give ourselves credit for thinking about things?
I was going to say, as soon as you said we're going to share what we know, I'm thinking in my head, get ready for an hour of wild speculation,
wow,
America.
Wild speculation. That's exactly what it is. It's wild speculation. Although we did elect not to do the tequila shots before the beginning of the show because we want to stay on the up and up somewhat.
Yep.
Right.
I mean,
you know, the show first.
I mean, I was going to have regrets either way on
either,
that decision.
Yeah. But see, now you'll remember exactly what it is.
Oh,
that
vivid
you were
regrets.
Regretting.
That's
and
bad.
Just remember all these incredibly shocking and personal things that I got out of Ron Stutz in the last shows that I did with him. You never know what Aaron Keck
is
going to
tell
the story.
Speaking of fear and trembling, he's still shaking from that harrowing experience.
That harrowing experience of the weekend water cooler torture.
Yes.
Right? It's a little water cooler boarding. Water boarding cooler.
2 minutes in, we've already gone there.
It's just sailed right off the edge, and I never had a chance. It's entirely on you. Well, let's start with the great big federal government, since it's so easy to dismiss that.
Indeed.
So the race that we have this time around, unfortunately, no senators. Although I have to say this and get it out of the way so that people can just then dismiss everything else I say. I'm going to give some credit to Richard Burr lately because, you know, the Senate Intelligence Committee is actually hanging on to its integrity somewhat in doing its investigatory work. So where I normally would be wishing to have the opportunity to go out and vote against Richard Burr, I don't feel that way so much lately. I think he may have some use to the cause. So, you know, if you're listening, Richard Burr,
that's fair.
And oh my goodness, why wouldn't you be? You know, you're winning some respect, some proper respect here on the Hill.
I think the important thing is to be able to compartmentalize, right?
That's
and
right.
You get this with the General Assembly as well sometimes where the Supreme Court as well,
exactly.
When you'll have the Supreme Court coming down
exactly.
with the decision that, okay, I can go along with that. And it was unanimous, you know, Gorsuch did the right thing, Thomas did. But you have to be able to separate issues from other issues. So we're sitting here talking about Richard Burr really doing a strong job on the Intelligence Committee. Simultaneously, he's being lambasted by progressives all over the place for being one of the highest paid senators in America by the National Rifle Association.
That's
so
right.
Criticize him on that issue, endorse him on this other one. And I think that's the key to civility, right?
Yeah,
that's the key to keeping a perspective on everything.
At the risk of making a reference to another famous segment on this radio station,
uh-oh.
The thing that is not a thing about that is, I don't know about you, but I haven't seen Richard Burr all over the TV saying, NRA, NRA, I love the NRA. You know, a lot of people who have taken a lot of money from the NRA have been conspicuously busy washing their hair
yes.
and unavailable to get on television and,
yeah.
and support those positions.
Which is all fine and dandy.
It's an interesting meter on where is the zeitgeist right
yeah.
now.
Don't get too sanguine about that, though, because
never.
If enough people say nothing, then nothing will get done
well,
as
that's
well.
Right. Yeah, but if But if some of the right people would just shut up for a little while, we might get something done.
Or you can go the opposite direction. You can go down the road of saying nothing and hoping the issue washes away. Or you can go down the Donald Trump road of saying literally everything that you could possibly say that pops into your head and getting people so confused that everyone just kind of stumbles awkwardly away from the table.
That's the DWI route.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, Donalding while impaired.
So let's talk about the
election. Okay, anyway, election. So
down to Congress.
So
here.
Down to Congress. Yeah. We of course in our district have our wonderful congressman. I think there's not much dispute about that, David Price, who is up for re-election for the umpteenth time. I mean, how many terms has he had?
He first got elected in 1986, so he's been in Congress for 32 years.
With one exception.
With one exception.
Right,
he
so
lost in 1994, came back in 96. Right. So he's served in 15 terms. This would be his 16th.
Right. Maybe lucky six, sweet 16.
Lucky 16,
Could be. You know, so he's got some primary challengers, and I don't think any of them, either of them, thinks that he's a bad guy.
No.
Or will be just a pushover candidate, as a person running in a primary. I've certainly seen plenty of Facebook ads popping up.
Yeah.
talking about the wonderful work that David Price is doing.
He's kind of stepped that up, you've noticed. That's definitely true. So we're talking about the 4th district, which is Orange County. A road in Durham,
right.
And then a big chunk of Raleigh because that's how our
that? Yeah, what
I don't
crazy,
even know.
Yeah. I mean, you're our gerrymandering expert, so you're the king of the map.
Yeah, this is the district that is gerrymandered to cram as many Democrats as humanly possible into one district so as to give Republicans an extra advantage in all of the surrounding districts. So
because
this is
it.
A district that is made for Democrats to win every single time. So you've got a Republican candidate, Steve Von Lohr. He's going to get the Republican nomination because he's the only candidate. He's going to appear on the general election ballot, and he's not going to win. You've got two Libertarians. Barbara Howe is probably the strongest one. She ran for governor in 2012. You've also got Perry Whitlock, who is actually going to appear on the primary ballot as Scary Perry Whitlock.
I think they're going to list it that way.
They are going to list it that way, which is why the Libertarian Party is not a viable third party in America today.
But he'll get the Mad Dog Mattis vote.
He very well may.
Best nickname for the job.
But not a name that Mattis would actually appear on the ballot as opposed to Scary Perry Whitlock. I'm actually going to – I would be pretty sure about that.
Because I think that when Mattis talked to Trump and said, make me Secretary of Defense, or yes, I would be willing to do it, I think he was sure to mention
that his name
somebody,
is Mad Dog.
Somebody gave Trump the resume and made sure to highlight that nickname.
Given the president, I have
no doubt.
Write
it in the margin. But
the Republicans not going to win in the 4th district, and the Libertarians not going to win. The Democratic nominee is going to win. So election that really matters is this primary race, and it is a microcosm for a lot of things that are going on within the Democratic Party right now. You've got David Price, who's been in Congress for 30 years.
Right.
He is a strong progressive. He is older. He is white and male. And while he is a strong progressive, he's not a firebrand, right?
Right.
He's not out
there
in front of the cameras all the time really sticking it to the Republicans and making the rounds on the talk shows. And the Democratic Party, especially in 2018, especially in response to Trump, has moved a lot harder to the left on a variety of issues. And insofar as we've done that, we're also looking for the sort of firebrand candidates.
Right.
And in addition to the more vocal progressive advocates, we're also looking for younger people.
Looking for the next generation.
Because, God, 2020. When your leading candidates for the presidential nomination are Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, who are both, I think, 130 years old, I think there's a need in the party for new blood.
Well, and I will say, too, this does make you, if you're a reasonable and responsible Democrat, and and I like to think I'm at least one of those.
they don't go hand in hand.
You do look at this, and you look at someone like Dianne Feinstein as well, and you say, you know, yeah, she didn't get the nomination or the support, the endorsement of mm-hmm. her of the California Democratic Party, and the reason that they cited really was that she's 84 years
yeah.
old. And is seeking another 6-year term as senator.
Yeah.
And I just think it's, you know, I hate saying it, and I hate facing the reality of it.
But say it.
But the responsible thing is to say we're living in a time where we need this generational shift.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter that she's a wonderful person and has her issues that she is mm-hmm. absolutely fierce on. I was very admiring, by the way, of how she took the president to school the other day in their little meaningless meeting in the White House about guns.
Talking about the gun control
and
meeting.
Showed
yeah.
him her cheat sheet and said, look, here's a chart and, you know, it's pictures. You can understand this. And he seemed to take that in. And, you know, she seemed to be someone who can do that. But, you know, honestly, they both kind of look like everybody's grandparents
mm-hmm.
sitting there at the table trying to figure out their AOL password.
Yeah. So, and there is that desire and a need, I think, within the Democratic Party for new blood, new generation, and also more African-American representation, more
right.
female representation,
right.
fewer straight white guys. And all of those are coming together, I think, in this District 4 primary. We've got a really, really,
really
strong incumbent in David Price, who everyone likes, but not a firebrand, older white male. And you've got Richard Watkins and Michelle Laws, both running against him. Both of them are African-American. Richard Watkins is a scientist out of UNC.
Right.
You've got a lot of scientists
right.
who are running for office this year. But both of them are younger, and
right.
both of them are more kind of vocal, passionate, energetic,
right.
progressive advocates.
Right. So it's a really valuable contrast
yeah.
to
yeah.
see what the base wants.
Yep.
And I don't think it's easy to predict the outcome of that mm-hmm. race at all.
I think David Price is going to have the advantage for a couple of reasons. He does have stronger name recognition. People in the 4th District are not dissatisfied with David Price, I don't
right.
think.
I
haven't really seen that. Watkins and Laws are both kind of appealing to the same
identity politics.
Groups of people within the Democratic Party who want that
right.
younger generation to come up. They're both appealing to those voters.
Right.
So they
right.
may split the vote between them, and that gives Price an advantage. The other thing that Price has going for him, and this is also worth being aware of too, and we talked about this before we started, but I'll say the same thing about Michelle Laws, for instance, because I know Michelle better, and she's great. I love her.
She's
a fantastic speaker, really passionate, right about everything.
Should come to WCHL
yes.
more often.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And she's a terrific, terrific speaker and advocate. I will say the same thing, though, about Michelle versus David Price that I said 2 years ago about Bernie Sanders versus Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders is a vocal, passionate advocate for progressive causes in a way that Hillary is not and was never going to be.
Right.
I think Hillary was always more interested and willing than Bernie was in doing the sort of everyday mundane tasks that go along with
right.
having a position in high office.
Right.
And I think that's also true of David Price. I think he understands that a lot of the work of being a U.S. House representative is boring and mundane.
And
I think he's more
yeah.
I think he's more equipped, if only because he's been in Congress for 30 years and he
right.
understands the sort of day-to-day operations.
Right.
And I think he's more willing to get down in that muck
right.
Than Michelle Laws is. But then again, I could be surprised because I would have said similar things about other candidates or other legislators who then got into office and were fantastic
would
at that.
Surprisingly
so,
effective.
Yeah.
You just really can't tell until they get into it.
Yep.
They probably don't know either which part of the job they're
mm-hmm.
going to like best. I mean, you know, Anthony Weiner was pretty good at, you know, banging the shoe on the table and you know, getting on TV and appearing to be a strong advocate.
Mm-hmm.
But he never really did anything when
yeah.
he was in Congress.
Yeah.
Well, I think we know he did some things, but, you know.
We'll see. But that's the thing
we want to talk about on Family Radio.
Yeah, that's the yeah. thing that I want to hear from the challengers to David
right.
Price. Like, are
right.
you also willing to do just sort of the mundane stuff?
Right.
And if they are, then go for it.
Then go for it. Go for the mundane.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a great tagline. And remember,
a bad campaign slogan.
Remember that you read it on a Chapel Hill website.
That is the worst campaign slogan ever.
Well, after the worst campaign slogan ever, we're going to take just a quick break after so that we can recharge the batteries. We're talking to Aaron Keck, our senior elections correspondent for Indecision 2018. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. We're back with our senior elections correspondent, Dr. Aaron Keck, host of the Aaron Keck Show here on WCHL every afternoon at 3 or so, I guess.
Yeah, it's usually 3.
3-ish.
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 306.
306.
306 is when it all
starts. Just in case at the last second you really need to run to the bathroom, you can come back at 306 and not have missed.
You know, live radio, you don't have that problem as often as you think. What you do have is the coughs and the sneezes that will come up, and then you have to go to a commercial fairly quickly.
I saw a guy on Meet the Press Daily, which is on MSNBC in the afternoons, and he was in the middle of a sentence and got something caught in his throat, and he just practically turned purple and was like waving at Chuck Todd to over there, go over there. It was just like he fell silent. And it looked like he was looking down. It looked like he was looking at his phone, and it was like, you better be getting a message that says, honey, my water broke. Come right away, because, you look like you just are looking at your phone. But then he came back in a moment and said, I'm sorry, I had something in my throat.
Yeah, this will happen to guests in the studio as well. There was one time not that long ago when I was interviewing someone, and they had the crud like everyone else did because it was the wintertime, and they started coughing and could not stop. So they had to legitimately leave the studio and run out the door and just have a coughing fit while I vamped for 40 seconds as if they were still in the room.
Right. You just said, well, let me ask you a complicated question.
I don't know if anyone listening picked up on any of that, but try to make it sound smooth even when
it's
not.
Well, listen, let me tell you something. Your mom noticed. Your mom probably texted you that night and said, why didn't you let that poor guy answer?
No.
You just went on and on.
No. She hasn't texted me that, and it's
not yet,
but I've done that on numerous occasions where I've let people go on without talking. So if it was ever going to happen, it was going to have happened already.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Well, you know, your mom is sharp.
That's true.
Your mom is one of the more dedicated listeners to WCHL, and I'm sure will be listening to this program and providing feedback.
I'm sure.
Which I look forward to, of course. Because she's raised a genius, so why wouldn't she be a sharp listener? Yeah, no, see, a humble genius, too. Right. See, oh my goodness, I'm going to cry in a minute.
A humble genius, yeah.
A humble genius. What did Trump say he was? Did he say a humble genius? No.
No, it was something else.
A stable genius. Nobody ever said you were stable. So
that's true.
That's
yeah.
Right. All right. So now let's get on to the county commissioner's race.
Cool.
Take all the time you need. We have about 3 minutes.
Okay, good.
Let's get these out of the way. There are only three seats available.
You've got three this year and 4 2 years from now, because there'll be two District 1 seats. You've got one at-large or two at-large seats. I can't remember. You've got one at-large seat this year, which is the entire county. Barry Jacobs is the incumbent. He filed to run for re-election and then decided to withdraw, apparently to let Sally Green, former Chapel Hill Town Council member, file to run essentially in his place, because he withdrew and she filed on the same day at the same time. So I believe that was a joint effort.
Right. And I guess that they're ideologically close enough to each other that he was satisfied that she would basically represent him.
And Sally Green's got a terrific resume. Again, she's been on the Chapel Hill Town Council twice because she stepped down and then came back and got appointed to fill out a term. Did not run for re-election, but now she's running for election to the county commissioners. But she's got a couple of strong candidates who have also filed to run for that seat. You've got Brian Crawford, who is an attorney from Hillsboro, office in Carrboro, lives in Hillsboro, worked for the Orange County Democratic Party. He was on the Affordable Housing Advisory Board.
Right.
So his issues, education, affordable housing, Sally Green also really strong on affordable housing. She did a lot of work on that. had in Chapel Hill. So they're both very strong candidates. You've got Noah Oswald, who is also an attorney. He's from Mebane. I don't actually know as much about him right now, but he is, again, we talked about this with respect to the U.S. House race, the need for kind of younger blood. Noah Oswald is that next generation candidate who's stepping up and running for office, which is something that we're seeing across the state and across the country.
And so it would be nice to see somebody from Mebane on the commissioners.
Yeah,
because, you know, it's a lot of representation from Chapel Hill and Hillsborough traditionally. Yeah. So,
but I think right now, if you were going to look at that race, Sally Green is going to be the favorite just because of her resume and the fact that she's got more name recognition as a former Chapel Hill Town Council candidate. But watch for Brian Crawford, because he's going to have a lot of support from a lot of really strong people. There are a lot of people who are saying he's their candidate. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
and then we'll see what Noah Oswald can do.
That's going to be an interesting race. Of course, Mia Burrows has decided not to seek re-election in her seat. Although, you know, as Michelle Laws points out, when there's a seat, it doesn't belong to anybody just because they've had it for a while. So Jemzeta Bedford is seeking that. She, formerly of the Chapel Hill School Board, like Mia Burrows
Like Mia Burrows, yeah.
It's like a track for the commissioners.
It has been, yeah.
And so she's running for that seat, and the end.
Yeah, no one is running against her, which surprises me to no end. Jemzeta Bedford is a really strong candidate, very well liked across the board. So it's not the biggest surprise in the world, but usually when there's an open seat, I mean, the one thing that is universally true, whenever there's a power vacuum, a whole bunch of entities rush in to fill it. Mia Burrow steps down. You would think that a bunch of people would have rushed in to fill that seat, but Jemzeta Bedford filed, and everyone in District 1 said, nope, I'm good.
Yeah, she sounds good.
She sounds good.
And I do think with that seat, to be in all honesty, that that seat and people who run from the Chapel Hill sounds like the wrong thing, running from it, but running from progress from the Chapel Hill School Board to the Orange County Board of Commissioners, that when they get on that board, that they're expected basically to raise their hands on behalf of the Chapel Hill schools, and that's their primary constituency, let's be fair. And as long as they're doing that, and, you know, when you have another school board candidate who is replacing a former school board member. When you have another school board member who was effective on that board, who is going to step up to this, that it's pretty good reason to think, Yeah, she'll do that.
And there's a long history of that in Orange County, right? Because you've got Jemzeta Bedford now. You had Mia Burrows up until this year, and now she's stepping down. Pam Heminger, same thing. We went from the school board up to Orange County commissioners and then back to Chapel Hill as mayor, but she went on the same track.
And the unusual change, of course, is that Steve Halkiotis worked for the Orange County Schools and served on the Orange County Board of Commissioners for a long, long time.
And then went back to the school board.
And now, after he retired from the schools, then was elected to the school board. So,
that's easy.
And then we can predict the winner. We're going to call that.
Jemzeta Bedford has a really, really good chance of winning that seat with a very high percentage of the vote.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm going to say, you know, she's, you know, before returns are in, I'm going to say with zero precincts reporting.
Yes,
I'm calling that.
We can probably call that one for Jemzeta. Yeah.
And the remaining one is Earl McKee and Tommy McNeil running for, so to speak, Earl McKee's seat on the Board of Commissioners.
And that's District 2, which is Northern Orange County. Earl McKee has been on that board. How many terms has he been on there? I think. He's been on the board as long as I've known, so for at least 10 years. He's extremely well-liked, again, very popular, running for re-election. And you've got a candidate in Tommy McNeil who, again, represents the sort of new direction, even if they're not necessarily at strong odds with each other. You've got the trend in 2018, especially on the Democratic side, because all of these are Democratic nominees or candidates, is for that sort of new generation, people who have been underrepresented, African-Americans, LGBT people, women, younger people, especially scientists. In the case of Richard Watkins
running
for office, and you're getting this again with Tommy McNeil running against Earl McKee. McNeil has run before. He ran in 2008 for county commissioner. He ran for Orange County School Board in 2012, put his name in for State House for appointment in 2013. That's when Greg Meyer ended up getting that seat. So he's been around, and he's run for office.
Right.
Hasn't won yet, and this is going to be interesting to watch, but Earl McKee is a really, really strong candidate to challenge in the primary. The last time he ran was 4 years ago. Mark Markopoulos challenged him in the primary.
Right.
And Mark Markopoulos was an extremely strong candidate.
He really was.
A lot of name recognition, great ideas, smart guy. Did get elected to county commissioners 2 years later, but did not... Earl McKee won that election by a fairly wide margin because that's how strong a candidate McKee is.
Yeah, so. And I don't think that was the right I don't think that was the right district for Mark.
Right.
Mark got an at-large seat, right?
I believe so, yeah.
I think that's right, yeah. So
I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, I think he picked up a fair amount.
No, he did get an at-large seat because Renee Price is the other District 2 representative.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep.
Okay, well, so that's the commissioner's race, and our race is to the – is to take a break, and because our race is for sponsors. We love our sponsors. We love our sponsors, and we want them to love us right back. So we're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Aaron Keck, and you're listening to 97.9 The Hill. And we're back talking to Aaron Keck about the 2018 Orange County races. The race for the immense power involved in being what's up next, the Register of Deeds.
Ooh.
It just crackles with power.
Hey, remember 4 years ago when that was the highest profile race in Orange County?
And I was going to say, if you think it doesn't, let's try to go back in your mind.
Dial back the clock, yeah.
And remember marriage equality and the Register of Deeds offices all over the state and the country, for that matter.
Oh, poor Mark Chilton, by the way, because he ran – so 2014 was right before the court in North Carolina ruled – struck down the gay marriage ban in North Carolina, and then another – some months went by before the Supreme Court did the same thing on the national level. But in the primary in May of 2014 or whatever month that was, you had Register of Deeds as the office that everyone was looking to, 100 counties across the state, and every single Register of Deeds had this decision to make. And you had some that were starting to sign off on marriage licenses for same-sex couples, even though Amendment 1 was still on the books. And this was the crux of the race in 2014 when Mark Chilton decided to run for Register of Deeds, which he's eminently qualified for anyway, but decided to run for Register of Deeds against an incumbent who was very well liked and respected and had been on the job for a while. And didn't Sarah Stevens also?
Did Sarah run in that race? Or
yes,
was it the
yes.
one before? It was.
Because there
one.
Was another.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was Sarah Stevens as another really strong candidate. He had three incredibly strong candidates all running for Register of Deeds. But Mark Chilton said and made it very, very, made it a point to say, if I get elected, I will sign off on same-sex marriages. I don't care what the state constitution says. I know that this is the right thing to do, and I will make a literal federal case out of it if I have to.
Right.
Got elected, or won the nomination.
Right.
Technically wasn't elected until the general election when he
November,
was running unopposed.
Right.
And in the meantime,
in
the court ruled that that same-sex marriages were struck down. So it was actually the incumbent who ended up signing off on the first same-sex marriages in Orange County.
Well,
and the first same-sex marriage was Lydia Lavelle, who had replaced Mark as Carborough mayor.
Well, Mark Chilton, I know you're listening to this program because I'm going to tag you on Facebook.
He's done a terrific job as Register of Deeds,
though. I have to tell you that what were the chances that that particular Supreme Court was going to steal your thunder?
That was such a wild year. Such a wild year.
You could not possibly have predicted that they would steal your thunder, but I think he's happy. He never reported his thunder stolen.
Yes.
Yes, an unreported theft.
Yeah. And yeah. and Mark Chilton has done a terrific job as Register of Deeds, like really revamped the office and Spanish language, opportunities or
more
documents is the word I'm looking for. Yeah, more accessibility for Spanish-speaking residents. Just did that huge project with slave records, like tracing it back hundreds a couple hundred years. Yeah.
What a job.
Like really significant stuff that's been done.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so that's probably one of the reasons that, you know, along with getting the Supreme Court the Roberts Court to bow to his will.
Yeah.
these are just some of the reasons, I guess, that he's running unopposed.
Yeah.
So good for you, Mark. So we're going to call that race also. Just putting a star by your name, the check. Right?
She is literally putting it. You can't see this on the radio.
I'm putting a check by your name.
She's got a list of all of the candidates with a star next to James Etta Bedford and a star next to Mark Chilton. So it's really, really exciting to see you taking a hard stand on these tough races.
These tough races. It's just too close to call. Oh, one candidate. Yeah, I'm calling that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so next we have Clerk of Superior Court, one seat, and we have candidates James C. Stanford and Mark Kleinschmidt, former mayor of Chapel Hill.
So one thing that deserves to be mentioned in the context of all of these, and Clerk of Superior Court is the randomly high-profile race in the same way that Register of Deeds was 4 years ago. Like, no one ever looks at these races first and foremost, but you look at Clerk of Superior Court and you say, oh, man, you've got a longtime incumbent. Jamie Stanford's been in that job for close to 20 years.
What do you do in that job? See? Okay.
When people
the day
come
has arrived when I asked Aaron Keck a question to which he does not have the answer immediately.
I don't know everything, Gene.
Is it like, my goodness. That's how I know you're a genius. Perhaps achieving stability now.
Is this a
thing about scheduling trials
I think it's scheduling. I know it's handling paperwork and fines and fees and things like that when people come to court to pay fines and fees and things
like
that. They work with the court.
Discretionary authority that they could settle a case or for example, if somebody comes in and says, you know, they have a fine that is due and they don't have the money, does the clerk have the discretion to give them an extension or something of that nature or work out a payment plan?
Oh, well, they might.
I honestly don't know. You know, it's not a race that everybody would look at and say, "Ooh, I just don't know who I'm going to vote for in that clerk."
This is one where, in order to really make an informed decision, not only do you have to educate yourself about the candidates, you've got to educate yourself about the office
about
too.
What the job is,
and that's good to do for any office, especially these local positions that we don't necessarily know a whole lot about because it's the national news that gets covered or the state level news that gets covered.
And controversy, right?
But I know a lot of current and former members of the Chapel Hill Town Council who find it a constant source of amusement and frustration all at the same time that so many people come to them and ask them to do something about the schools, which they have no control over whatsoever. That's the school board and the county commissioners, and the Chapel Hill Town Council isn't really directly affected. And Silent Sam, same thing. People are going to the town council, and this was kind of a big issue last year when the town council races were open and there were four open seats. People were asking the candidates about Silent Sam.
What are you going to do about
Sam? Well, I can take a position on whether I think it should stay up or come down, but ultimately this is – the town council can pass a resolution, but they can't really do a whole lot else directly.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it's one of the few areas over which they are not our overlords in that area.
And that is my way of moving the subject away
from the fact that I don't have any idea a whole lot about the
role of Clerk of Superior Court.
Well, we're going to continue this program, but we're only going to talk about things about which you have a vast array of knowledge.
Oh, God.
So there's only about
so we're going to end
about,
early
we're
then?
We're going to end early then, yeah. So no, we're not going to end early, but we are going to take one more break, and then we're going to come right back with our final thoughts about the last two races, which are accidentally grouped together, the sheriff's race and the Orange County Board of Education. They're just listed that way by the county on the website.
Not a
folks.
Bad idea to group them together, though.
It's not always a bad idea. Yeah. They do have things to do with each other.
Yeah,
so
they do.
We're going to talk more with Dr. Keck and break it all down when we come back with more on the Water Cooler. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. And we're back with our unbelievably last segment. Aaron, where has the time gone? I don't know what happened.
It went fast. It always does.
It always does. It's like a little, you know, through the looking glass or something. So our last two races, which are paired together on the listing of filings, talking with our senior elections correspondent, Aaron Keck, about the Orange County School Board race and the sheriff's race. The sheriff is listed first, so let's talk about him first. By the way, quite a gap in the filing fee for these two races. If you want to be on the school board, you have to drop down your picture of Abraham Lincoln. It's a $5 fee. And if you would like to be the sheriff, it's $1,186.
Yep.
How did they come up with it, 86?
I think I was talking with Ashley Campbell about this not long ago, right at the end of the filing period. The 1186 is a certain percentage of your salary as sheriff.
Oh.
I think it's, is it 1%? It can't be 10% because then you don't make any money as sheriff.
Yeah.
I think it's 1% or something like that, 1 or 2%. But that's what the 1186
is. That would be what it is for clerk of court.
For clerk of court as well, because that's close to $1,000. That's an interesting. That makes it an interesting dynamic when it costs $5 to run for county school board, a couple hundred bucks to run for county commissioner, and $1,000 to run for sheriff. What you then get is a situation where the only people who ever run for sheriff are people who are very, very serious about running and serving in that office, people who believe that they can win, people who either have enough support prior to even running that they're able to raise that kind of money to begin with, which is a decent signal that you're an okay candidate, or you've got that much money just sort of lying around. And this is the downside of charging $1,000 to run, is that it kind of excludes people who don't have $1,000 lying around.
However, in the age of crowdfunding, I think people should be able to get that money together if they're serious.
But the school board race is literally open to anyone who has $5 and enough time to run up to the Board of Elections office and fill out the form. Chapel Hill mayor, same thing. Tim Sukram ran back in 2013. And this is still my favorite. So maybe it was 2011. I think it was 2011. One of my favorite stories about local elections, Tim Sukram, who had no political experience at all, younger guy, ran for mayor in 2011. And when they asked him why, he said, "It cost $5. Why didn't you?" Why doesn't everybody do this?
That's a great answer.
Yeah,
that's
right.
A great answer. And this probably is a significant percentage of what you get paid, which is squat.
Yeah, it's very it's a very low paying job, right?
Yeah, it's a you actually don't get paid anything. You get a stipend,
right?
You know.
The race for sheriff is interesting. You've got Charles Blackwood, who's the incumbent. I think popular by pretty much all accounts. I think it's unfair to say.
And handsome, according to him.
According to him, yes. And then you've got Tony White, who is running against him. Tony White was an investigator for the sheriff's office, recently retired back in 2016. Now he's running for sheriff in the same way that Blackwood had retired from the sheriff's office and then ran 4 years ago when Lindy Pendergrass finally stepped down. So those are two quality candidates running against each other in the Democratic primary. That'll be an interesting one to watch.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a good sheriff either way.
Yeah.
I'm pretty well.
And very much the same thing 4 years ago when you had a whole bunch of candidates running and you ended up with that runoff election between Charles Blackwood and David Caldwell.
It's
I mean, I'll vote for one versus the other, but ultimately whoever wins that race is going to be a great sheriff.
Right.
And I think we're going to get a similar situation here too.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, if somehow Sheriff Blackwood doesn't win, he'll probably go on and write a book and it'll be a bestseller.
There you go.
He can do everything.
Yeah.
So
the school board race.
The school board race is quite the cattle call. We have only one incumbent running to seek her re-election, which is Brenda Stevens.
Brenda Stevens.
And we have a long list of other candidates. I'll tell you what, here. Why don't you run down and run down that list, and by the time you finish, the show will be over.
All right, good. So we've got Jessica Aguilar. She's an investigator with the Durham DA's office. She served very briefly on the board in 2016.
Right.
She was appointed to fill out a term and serve for a couple of months. Hawkeye Aguilar, who I believe is married to Jessica, also running. You've got Sarah Smiley. Smiley, who is a former teacher, not in this district. I think she taught up in New York, but she's a parent with two kids at Cameron Park, focusing on the issues that you will be focusing on with this race, which is equity, funding concerns, obviously, right, with maintenance for buildings and also the lack of funding coming down from the state and federal government, hiring and retaining quality teachers. Hillary McKenzie's lived in Orange County all her life. She served on Orange County's Hate-Free Schools Coalition. She's more of kind of a stronger progressive, focusing on equity issues, restorative justice. Mike O'Haggerty, also kind of a stronger progressive. Will Atherton, running for school board for the second time. He ran back in 2010, focusing on budgeting and the achievement gap and also safety. Right. Didn't win, but come back in 2018 and run again, and you know safety is going to be a big issue.
It really is.
And then James Needham, who is from Mebane, who filed right at the very end of the filing period, still learning about him. But there's eight candidates running, and there's going to be three new candidates on the board, and there's many issues. Safety is going to be front and center.
Right.
Equity, funding for just everyday activities in schools,
right,
funding for maintenance, because we're $400 million in the hole between the two school districts in terms of the stuff that we need in order to fix and repair and maintain what we've already got. Equity, transparency,
right,
justice and discipline in the schools and what we can,
right,
do to improve that. Retaining teachers that we've got, hiring good teachers. There's a lot of really important issues.
There's a lot of important issues. And believe me, it's not going to be resolved a day after Election Day, of course. But well, that's the field. So, and I'm not going to put a star by anybody's name in that school board race. I don't think anything is certain.
Well, a really, really quick point that I wanted to make about the Mark Kleinschmidt running against Jamie Stanford. Talked with Tom Jensen of Public Policy Polling recently, and he said oftentimes name recognition is a huge, huge factor,
right,
in
true,
who gets elected. Not so much, this is him talking, not so much at the local level, because even the really prominent, well-known candidates on the local level, like think about Mark Kleinschmidt or Sally Green running for county,
right,
commissioner,
right,
or Brenda Stevens is the one incumbent in the school board race, they might have an edge in name recognition over the other candidates, but not by much. Most,
right,
people in Orange County don't know who our local officials are, so they don't have the edge in name recognition that you might otherwise think they would, which makes these races a lot more wide open and unpredictable.
Well, that's quite a ride.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a lot of fun this year. I'm so happy to see so many people running for office, and their ages are all listed. You can find all this on the Orange County Board of Elections website, and all of their email addresses, so you can just start pounding them with your own questions.
Yep.
And
you should.
And as well you should. And I hope that many of them, if not all of them, will at one point or another come on into WCHL and spend some time on the air with all of us, because it's a great thing to run for office. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I can say this having run and lost. the run is a lot of fun. So, Aaron, thank you as usual. And, you know,
always
look forward to having you come back to the water cooler for a fresh drink of water.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.